How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 199 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can head out to iTunes. You can subscribe to the podcast there and leave a review once you're on that page. Find us on audioboom.com as well and log on to normantranscript.com. You can check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. You can see all my Thunder coverage there. I got player evaluations got up there now. So I got Andre Robertson's from Monday, Doug McDermott on Tuesday, doing the wings all this week, one a day, Monday through Friday. Then next week, Monday through Friday, is going to be the bigs. Following that, the following week is going to be the guards. So I got player evaluations. You know, my Robertson one is what he did this year, what's ahead this summer, some details on the four-year, $48 million contract extension offer from the Thunder that he turned down in October, which he received after Steven Adams and Victor Oladipo had already received their offers. And he ended up turning that down and will now become a restricted free agent this summer. So lots of stuff on Robertson in there. I'm going to have more stuff on McDermott on Tuesday. I was on every day of the week, as you can probably tell from the fact that I wasn't on Monday, or if you listen to Friday's podcast, or if you follow me on Twitter. I'm doing Tuesdays and Thursdays now, so just twice a week for Locked On Thunder. I'm going to go back to either three or four or five times a week as we near the end of June when there's the draft and there's probably Russell Westbrook's MVP announcement. And then as we obviously approach free agency and all that stuff, I'm going to increase the frequency of shows. But at least for now, for at least the next few weeks, it's going to be twice a week. And at that moment, let's bring in the guest for today. Is this lucky number 18?
You know, I've lost count, but here's the thing, Fred, is I'm disappointed.
Well, I'm going to say who you are first, because this is the franchise 107.7's John Hamm. Now, why don't you tell me why you're disappointed?
Because this is episode 199. If you would have held off till Thursday, it would have been 200. That's a round number. I like round numbers.
I know. Could have had you on 200.
See, and now this is less impressive because I'm 199.
Yeah, well, number 200, I'm getting the big guess. Russell Westbrook, Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant are coming on together to discuss the difference between work friends and life friends.
Well, in that case, okay, I'll be 199.
Yeah, they're going on together. It's gonna be a big show. It's a big surprise. No one's supposed to know about it, but I figure I'll just let you know and nobody.
Cat's out of the bag now, man. I've already tweeted it out.
Yeah, what percentage of my listeners do you think that's real? Someone's gonna tweet at me thinking that's real.
We'll see. We'll see what your downloads look like on Thursday.
Yeah. I should one day just like tease a show, telling him I have Kevin Durant coming on.
Yeah,
and then just do it by myself.
It would be kind of like the last episode of Finding Richard Simmons,
where they
teased one episode and it went in a totally different direction.
Or I could just do an interview, only record the interview questions and the responses, and leave the rest blank, and just be like, "Oh yeah, Kevin's audio feed cut out."
Yeah, they're still tight-lipped about this whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. He was speaking extremely quietly. You have to turn up the volume all the way. So what do you think of that? So Russell Westbrook has a new commercial. Russell Westbrook apparently only communicates with the public through cryptic commercials. That's his only way. Yeah. So this new one is a Toomey one, which, okay, you know what my first response is to it?
What's that?
Did you see the tease for it on Twitter that Westbrook tweeted out?
I'm trying to remember. I tend to power scroll through Twitter sometimes, and I did see Russ tweeted out something.
So check out Russ's Twitter.
Okay,
anyone can do this. Yeah, it's a 15-second video he tweeted out teasing this new Toomey commercial he has. And at the end, it says, like, for the full advertisement, go to Toomey.com/19degree. They put white font on a white background. I had to watch it and then pause it at that like four different times so that I could read what website to go to. And the only reason that I did that was so I could like go watch the commercial, because like I have to watch the commercial because it's literally my job. If I were just some random person, I never would have spent enough time trying to figure out who puts white font on a white background. Isn't that insane?
A little insane.
Insane. Yeah. What is that?
That is,
Toomey,
I don't
come
know.
On. You're better than that, Toomey.
Yeah.
This is why I buy Delsey.
I hadn't heard of Toomey until this morning, so that kind of tells you.
I assume you're being sarcastic.
No, I've never heard of them until this morning.
You've never heard of Toomey?
I have not.
Toomey's like the nicest luggage.
Oh, okay. See, my luggage is the nicest whatever Walmart has on the rack at that particular time. So,
Toomey's like a really nice luggage, backpacks, mostly luggage company.
Okay, okay. Y'all, now I know.
Yeah, well, they're terrible at font.
Apparently so.
They're all, I was like, I can't believe that they're actually doing it like this. That was my takeaway from the whole commercial experience. But let's talk about the stuff that other people care about more. Because Russell Westbrook said in it, he called Oklahoma home about four times. The whole commercial is about a minute 45, and it takes place in Oklahoma very clearly. It shows shots from all over the city, shows graffiti from different spots, Oklahoma written on it. It's got the Devon Tower, and it's got, Russ standing up, it ends with Russ standing up in front of that Midtown sign over where Browns is on Walker. It's got, just lots of Oklahoma. Russ calls Oklahoma home. They talk about loyalty in the commercial, although he is not explicitly the one talking about loyalty. Give me your takeaway.
And you notice they talk to a lot of people in the metro area, some of them that are fairly well known. And they were, of course, talking about Russell Westbrook. Did not talk to any local radio hosts, interestingly. They probably
Got, those were people who were well known?
I think so. Like the barber, Scissorhands.
I don't know who that is.
Okay. Well, there's your Toomey travel, I guess. Scissorhands is, fairly well known in the metro area, sort of a haircutist, I suppose. So, but overall, the commercial, was basically a 2-minute love letter to the city of Oklahoma City, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that is what it was. It would be who knows what happens with the extension and that stuff. But, man, wouldn't that be a weird thing to release if he were not planning on signing the extension?
Right.
Now, yeah, people have done weird things before.
Sure.
But
sure,
it would be weird. Like, that's a thing that people are going to be like, wait, why the hell did this – if he doesn't sign the extension, people are going to be like, why the hell did you do this commercial?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure Oklahomans will be very excited about that.
I think so. And I'll still put this out there. I mean, there is still a viable explanation for Russ saying, you know what, I want to stay here, but I'm going to wait to sign my extension to put some pressure on the organization. I mean, that would be a very viable path. Not that Russ is looking, it wouldn't necessarily mean he's looking to leave. It would put a lot of pressure on the organization and, again, put them in that weird position of, do we trade you before we lose you? Anyway, that's something I've been thinking about the past few days, because it seems like the two paths that have been laid out are that Russ signs an extension or gets traded this summer. And I've been thinking about that third option, which is also, potentially viable.
Well, I think if he signs the extension, he's not going to sign it until late in the summer. Because unlike last year, if he waits until the end, it's not like the Thunder needs to stay under the cap or anything like that to extend
right.
him. They can extend him whenever they want at any point over the summer. So I think he probably wants to see what they end up doing.
Or he could sign on July 4th just to make a statement.
Or he could do that just to make a statement, sure. Sure.
But no, your point makes a lot of sense.
But I mean, that's kind of the medium of both, right? Because if you say, well, I want to, because I get what you're saying, and that does make sense. You know, if he says, all right, I want to stay. If this is a 50-win team, I would rather play for this team than any other 50-win team. That's what you're saying, right? Mm-hmm. But if it's not a 50-win team, I'd rather play for a 60-win team.
Right.
Is that your point?
Yeah, something like that. Or, I mean, obviously Russ having been around here, I mean, he kind of understands. I mean, this, I keep pointing this out because a lot of people don't seem to grasp it. Like, this team has had a winning record every year since 2009. So I think Russ would kind of understand that, you know, there is a desire in the organization to be good, to be really good, to be potentially great. And so there's not like, I don't think there's any necessarily some disconnects between he and the front office. But I'm just saying, if this were, let's say, the Los Angeles Lakers, you know, I don't think it would be outrageous if a player said, I'm going to forego that extension and see what you do. And I'm going to leverage some power here and see what happens.
The difference is it puts the Thunder specifically in a weird situation because they probably do need to trade him if he doesn't do it. Because what, are you going to lose Durant for nothing and then Westbrook for nothing? Like, you can still get, if you trade a full season of Russell Westbrook, you can still get a whole lot for Russell Westbrook.
Sure.
So you're gonna give that up? I don't think you are.
Yeah.
I don't think you're gonna risk losing him for nothing just so you can, you know, because if just so you can win, you know, however many, just so you can win 48 games. Like, I don't know if you're gonna do that. Now maybe something that I have been wondering is maybe Russell Westbrook kind of, for lack of a better phrase, holds the team hostage for the first month and a half of the free agency period. Mm-hmm. Says, all right, let's see you guys get in a position where you're paying the luxury tax. Now, granted, they could just find a clever way after, let's say if you re-signed in August, they could just find a, hypothetically, they could just, you know, find a way to get back down under if they wanted to after that.
sure.
But you know, there's a good amount, something I do know is that there is a good amount of trust built up between Westbrook and Sam Presti in the front office. And those two, there's a good amount of trust involved from those two avenues mutually. And maybe Westbrook says, no, I want to see you guys paying the luxury tax. I want to see like a real, not just a intellectual commitment to winning. I want to see a monetary commitment to winning. Pay the tax, you know, re-sign Dre for whatever he costs. Bring in a guy for the mid-level. Bring in a guy for, you know, or a portion of the mid-level. Bring in a guy for the biannual. Use that $5 million trade exception. Like, pay luxury tax, and then I'm willing to do it. And maybe that's something that he does. You know, it's not a coincidence that the 1 year in the Thunder's history that they paid the luxury tax the year that Kevin Durant was about to become a free agent. That is not a coincidence. So,
well,
I wonder if this is a you know, comparable situation.
Actually, they paid tax the year before too.
Yes.
So, and that was the season that I think that at the trade deadline, there was still the expectation that Kevin Durant was going to return and they might become the scariest number 8 seed in NBA history. And so therefore they, you know, they kept their payroll up. They did not try to jump back under the luxury tax at the trade deadline. So, but also too, I mean, and this is what I've talked about a lot as well. I mean, there was some strategical reasons for staying under the tax as long as they did and then ramping up their spending prior to Kevin Durant's free agency, not just to impress Kevin Durant, because the flip of that could be you're a taxpayer for 3 years, then the fourth year, and now when Kevin Durant is a free agent, maybe you're trying to dump some salary to avoid the repeater tax, and then how does that sell? So there's some other ways to look at that too.
You think they're going to pay? You think they're going to pay the luxury tax?
So here's the thing. They are, if you look at how they are set right now, and this is not counting, you know, Nick Collison, Taj Gibson, Andre Robertson, and this is assuming they keep the 21st pick, they've got about $6.3 million of wiggle room under the tax line. And you just rattled off Andre Roberson and the potential commitment to re-sign him. I mean, that alone is going to put them into tax territory. So it would make sense if they avoided the tax for one more year. That would completely reset the repeater clock. And if people are wondering some of this terminology, if a team is a luxury taxpayer in 4 out of 5 seasons, if at the end of the season they look back and say, okay, in 4 of the past 5 years you've paid the luxury tax, you are now subject to the repeater rate, which is a higher financial penalty. It would make sense for Oklahoma City to dodge the tax either this season or next in order to reset that clock. And then they could, you know, kind of go out and spend some more. I get the sense they're not necessarily scared of the repeater tax. I think it's more of a thing of, for example, let's say that, you know, they say our budget is $130 million on player salaries. So what's that going to buy? And you have to factor in the luxury tax as part of that. And whether it's the repeater rate or the normal rate, I think that's kind of how they're looking at it, as this is our budget. What can we buy with that budget?
Yeah, it'll be easier to pay the following year, or not to pay, I should say. Like, it's easier to dodge if you can, you know, you see what happens with the Kanter contract, gives you an extra year to unload the Kanter contract. Maybe, I mean, 2018 for Kanter, he has a chance to become a free agent. Now, mm-hmm. if I had to predict, I would guess he's going to pick up that player option in 2018 because it's worth, I think, $18.6 million. And he might want that big annual payday before taking on a longer deal. But some guys, you know, it's a personal thing. Some guys just opt for long-term security. So maybe he'll decline that player option, hit free agency 2018, and all of a sudden that's $18 million off the books right there. You're more than likely not going to have Gibson around anymore. You're going to have some other guys who are going to be free agents as well. So it might be easier just not to pay the tax in 2018 than it is this upcoming year. But that being said, if you do pay the tax and you win 54 games next year, it's really hard to justify cutting stuff from a team when you just won 54 or 55 or whatever it is. So part of it will depend on kind of what their production is next year too. It's really hard if you become a really good team, and I'm not saying they definitely will, I'm just speaking hypothetically. If you become a really good team, it's really hard to kind of start to cut fat from that team when you feel like when you're 50 some wins and you're young and you're looking like you're going to be getting better too. So that's a little bit of a predicament as well.
Yeah. And you just look at, I mean, some of the situations on the roster. I still don't fully understand why they did not stretch out the Ronnie Price contract. And again, for people that are, you know, scratching their heads on terminology, Ronnie Price is owed $2.4 million. They had the option of spreading that out over 3 years, so lowering that from 2.4 in 1 year to 800 grand over 3 years. They opted not to do that, which was curious. Very curious.
Well, I can guess.
Okay.
I have an educated guess. Sam Presti has likes to operate knowing the rules. And when they released Ronnie Price, they didn't know what the new collective bargaining rules were going to be.
Okay. Makes sense.
They were still like in the midst of CBA negotiations. And mm-hmm. I think they did it in a way where they at least knew how it was going to react under the new cap. When stretching, they just didn't know at the time what the cap would be, how you know, if stretching rules were going to change, and if so, would they be grandfathered? Would they not? Would that change? And I think they just wanted to do it in a way where they knew what the effects were going to be, and they could at least operate knowing 100% what the effects were going to be in 2017.
Yeah, I mean that's a perfectly reasonable.
And you can disagree with that, but that's my. I don't know that for sure. That's just based on knowing how the organization operates and past moves they've made and that kind of stuff. That's my educated guess.
I mean, it makes sense because, I mean, even looking at the Adams and Oladipo extensions, I think there was a point in time where it made sense to hold off on the extensions because they could have manufactured some cap room. if they would have held off on doing extensions for these guys and going into the summer of 2017 and maybe carve out a bunch of cap space. But there was a lot of rumors at that time that, you know, cap holds. In other words, these free agents would have counted as a larger amount against the salary cap and wiped out any potential cap room. So we might as well go ahead and do the extensions now rather than mess with free agency. And then as it turned out that those cap holds are not going to go into effect until the following year. But still, you talk about the uncertainty. And yeah, this is an organization that definitely prefers to deal with what is known right now.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great example. I think that probably stems from the Kevin Durant Rose Rule stuff. Like that's where that mentality and that kind of aversion to the unknown, I think that's probably where that comes from the most, right?
And yeah, you can't blame them. I mean, they signed Kevin Durant to a 5-year deal, to a 5-year extension. And then before it takes effect, the rules change. And then the league says, oh, okay, well, this Kevin Durant contract, it meets the criteria of this rule that you could not possibly have known about 6 months earlier. Yeah, I can completely understand some of the hesitation there.
Right, right. And there have been, you know, for all the stuff about how the Thunder get screwed by the collective bargaining rules, I mean, there's been some stuff that's gone their way, too. Like
The Kevin Durant thing. I mean, in a way, that did go in their favor because Kevin Durant was signed to a 5-year deal before that designated player exception came along that then was given to Russell Westbrook.
Mm-hmm. So they were able to have both of them on those long deals, and there's been some other stuff. You know, Russell Westbrook being able to extend is something else with him having the player option. I mean, that's another thing. Russell Westbrook and James Harden too in Houston having a similar rule where those guys are now allowed to get the designated player exceptions. Westbrook specifically this summer is able to get it. There have been some other things. It's not like, I mean, I think the narrative is every time a new CBA comes out, the Thunder, for some reason, always gets screwed. I don't buy it. That's true.
I will say, okay, so prior to 2011, as they're building the organization, at that time, you know, they drafted all these young guys, and the rules were you can extend all your guys for up to 5 years. The luxury tax is dollar for dollar. This is all right up their alley. And then boom, the rules change. And I feel like the rules, a lot of them changed in 2011 in response to what happened in Miami. You know, we can't have that Miami thing happen again. And kind of as the team up of the big three.
Just like some of the rules this time changed because of Golden State.
Yeah. Yeah. So in 2011, we had to break up Miami. Oklahoma City, unfortunately, I don't think the league necessarily targeted Oklahoma City in 2011. It's just the way the rules broke. It just didn't, some of them didn't quite go in their favor. And then in 2016, they were like, yeah, super teams, they're great. Make sure and write the rules so they can stay together forever. That's essentially what happened, in my opinion. No, they had an opportunity. They had an opportunity. You know, I'm telling you, owners got so upset when LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh went to Miami. They were furious across the league. And apparently there were some people furious when Kevin Durant went to Golden State last summer, but not furious enough to actually go and modify the rules to.
Well, there's some stuff out there. There's not anything that helps with this, that helps break up this particular Golden State team, but there is stuff to disincentivize it from happening again. First of all, I think if anything like if the cap ever takes that sort of jump ever again, which won't be for a while, but if the cap ever takes that sort of jump ever again, if the NBA ever experiences something like that again, first of all, I think they're going to smooth.
Well, at this time, just so people know, back in 2011, there was a lot of numbers in the CBA that were written like hard numbers. The mid-level exception is this. You know, BRI is projected to be this. And so they put in some hard numbers that are now percentages in the new agreement. So like you say, if there is a sudden big jump, it shouldn't have that kind of a drastic 1-year effect like we saw.
Right. Right. And on top of that, like the extensions, changing the extensions is a major, major thing in terms of guys staying in the places that they're in as opposed to flocking to other cities. Like Before, you could only offer extensions. You couldn't get as many years in an extension as you could in free agency if you were a great player, and you couldn't get as much money. And now, if you're especially if you're eligible for the designated player exception, you can get a lot more. And that's a massive change. That's a it's a major change. I mean, I think if the Thunder could offer, some people say this screws the Thunder too, because if this rule were around 2 years ago, then they could have offered Kevin Durant the designated player exception. It's like, no, that's not how rules work. First of all, every team was operating. Like, how far back do you want to go then for it to be okay?
Right. Yeah.
Like, every team, you could say that about every single team ever that's lost a good player then. Like, then it's not the Thunder. It's everybody in the league has been operating under these same rules. So I don't buy that. They certainly changed that. What happened with Kevin Durant? I shouldn't say what happened with Kevin Durant. That takes his agency away. But like, Kevin Durant's decision to go to Golden State certainly was brought up in those conversations about, well, should they change something about extensions and that kind of stuff? And that's reasonable. But like, it's not like the Thunder got screwed because that rule wasn't around. In anything, it helps them because they can now offer the DPE to Russell Westbrook in an extension.
Yeah. Yeah. The unfortunate thing, I go back to Orlando in the 1990s. People know the story there. They lost this one guy. He was a pretty good player. I think his name was Shaq.
What's his last name?
Neil or something. I can't remember.
Irish.
O'Neal.
Irish guy.
Yeah. That's him.
Yeah.
They lost Shaquille O'Neal. He left as an unrestricted free agent. He was supposed to be a restricted free agent. But in 1995, they did away with restricted free agency. Shaq leaves. And then in 1999, they restore restricted free agency. So the only time that they did not have the concept of restricted free agency was that four-year window, and Shaq left. Similarly, in 2011, we talked about this designated player rule where you can extend one of your rookie scale contracts out for 5 years at a max salary. They've changed that to two in the new agreement, meaning that if that rule had been in place back in 2011, the Thunder would have had that to offer to James Harden as well. Now, maybe that would have been enough. Maybe they wouldn't. I don't know. But it's not necessarily, again, I look at it more like, I think there's a feeling like the Thunder are specifically targeted by a lot of these rules. I don't buy that. I do buy that, yeah, some things, unfortunately, didn't quite break your way. Or some of the rules had an unintended consequence and might have screwed up some of the best laid plans.
All right, so the Thunder have, as of now, this does not include the 21st pick in the draft, but as of now, they have about $110 million on the books for next year.
Guaranteed money?
Yes, guaranteed money. That obviously does not include Andre Roberson. It obviously does not include Nick Collison or Taj Gibson. All those guys are free agents. Roberson restricted. The other two are unrestricted. I'm not sure if it includes Jeremy Grant's team option. I think it does include Jeremy Grant's team option. I can't remember if I added that in my Excel spreadsheet, but I'm pretty sure I did, because it's like a guarantee that they're picking that up.
If it's 110, then that does not include that $1.5 million. And that's also another kind of a side topic that I think is interesting about Jeremy Grant.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's 100% coming in. I mean, they're picking that up.
So, and the strategy there, this is the Chandler Parsons situation all over again. They could decline that option, make him a restricted free agent and lock him up on a long-term deal this summer, or lock him in at 1.5 for next season, and then he goes into unrestricted free agency.
I think they're picking it up because okay. The reason why is because I think they're going to try to avoid the tax. The best way to do that is bring in a rotation, hold on to a rotation player who you've got for $1.5 million.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely makes sense in that aspect, and the risk being that he's an unrestricted free agent in the summer of 2018.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
like I say, did not work out.
Did not work out for Houston and Chandler Parsons.
Or did it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in hindsight, well, no, he was good with Dallas.
No, I mean, look, no doubt. It's just one of those things where, I mean, Houston recovered pretty decently by getting Trevor Ariza. But yeah, I mean, I remember Daryl Morey getting thoroughly roasted that summer.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was a weird situation. They kind of had like, that's why I kind of thought the Parsons reaction to DeAndre Jordan was, it wasn't quite the same thing, but it was a little bit hypocritical because, you know, Parsons and Morey kind of had an agreement that, okay, you're gonna hit free
right.
agency and we're gonna give you a lot of money. We're gonna give you a lot of money, and then Parsons was like, nah, I'm out.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
and,
definitely.
And the Rockets could have matched, but you know, that was a kind of a weird situation. And then DeAndre did a different thing, but kind of, you know, emotionally similar thing, emotionally right. comparable. And you know, Parsons was obviously on the losing end of that one and didn't appreciate it. But I like Chandler Parsons. I'm not here to criticize. You know, it's a criticism. It's not a bashing. It's merely like a slightly critical observation. But I do like Chandler Parsons. I think he's a funny guy. And my favorite feature ever written was about Chandler Parsons by Tim McMahon.
Yes. The pink parrot antics of that evening.
Oh my gosh. That feature was the entourage of NBA feature stories. Wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, that was, yeah, it was great.
It was incredible. It was just, I've never read a feature with so many clubs being name dropped and like, I mean, it was so McMahon. It was so good. It was so good. If you have not read Tim McMahon's Chandler Parsons feature from, was it 3 months ago, maybe 2 months ago, like how Chandler Parsons ended up with the Max, you gotta read that story. It is awesome. It is so good.
And like I couldn't imagine like Clay Bennett like out clubbing with Steven Adams, right? But here's Mark Cuban, you know, in Oklahoma City, just out hanging with his bro Chandler Parsons, and Parsons is screaming about, you know, give me a max contract. I mean, it's amazing.
I don't think he said it in that sense. I think he said it in a way that I'm not going to quote on the podcast. But in a way more hilarious way, is he drove away in a taxi cab with his head out the window, screaming back, "Max or nothing." Then he added some words.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I love that story.
Yeah.
I thought that story was great. So, let's operate under the premise the Thunder are not trying to go into the luxury tax.
Okay.
What is a move or a couple of moves you think? Because they're going to have to make moves to shit because they're still trying to improve. It's not like they're trying to get worse. Like they're in a situation where they're trying to improve, but they're also trying to avoid the tax. So what is a move or a couple of moves, whether you're talking about people you think they could add for good value or people you think they would try to get rid of in the action of trying to stay under that tax? Because the tax line next year projects, we talked about their team salary next year at about $112 million right now. I guess I didn't include the grant deal, a little bit under $112 on the books for next year. The tax line projects, I mean, it could change on July 1st. Sometimes they're off with this kind of stuff. But the tax line right now for next year projects to be about $121 million. So that would put them, you know, $9 million under, not including the first round pick, too.
Yeah. And so, I'm including the first round pick in my calculations. We're talking about $1.78 million for that 21st pick. And obviously a lot can change at the draft. But yeah, that doesn't give them a whole lot of wiggle room there when you factor in that they need to re-sign the guy, you know, that you mentioned. They need help at backup point guard. And so here's the quandary with Enes Kanter. I can find so many positives for keeping him on the team. He likes being in Oklahoma City. He fits in here. He doesn't complain about his role. He's a high-level offensive player. He's a high-level rebounder. On the other hand, I look at paying him and Steven Adams a combined $40 million next season, and I just wonder, could you distribute that money elsewhere and do something better with it? So I think that's why. I mean, obviously, a lot of people are looking at Kanter because they still have visions of pick and rolls in the Houston series. I think it's more than that. I think it's more of a kind of a redistribution of take that money, work it into a trade, maybe get back another player, maybe a future asset of some sort, and, you know, carve a little bit of money off the payroll without it being a salary dump. I think there's a way to do that. And also give them some breathing room so they could re-sign Andre Roberson and pick up a couple of the other parts that they need.
Right. Find a team under the cap. Because if you get rid of Kanter, you need to bring in another player, and presumably it's not going to be a minimum guy. So you can at least trade him for somebody who's, you know, significantly cheaper but can help. I wonder what teams would want him. Like, is he the type of guy that Sacramento would want? I mean, Sacramento is kind of, you know, built around a low post offensive player and doesn't have a low post offensive player anymore. Yeah. So is he a guy they would want? Is Indiana a team that would want him? You know, they wanted Al Jefferson, but Larry Bird's gone there, and I don't know how they're going to feel about that. But like, he's a better player right now than Al Jefferson is, and the similar prototype. Problem is there are a lot of guys like him around the league now, and they're tough to trade. Like Orlando's been dealing with this for 2 years now, and they haven't been able to unload Vucevic.
What I would say counter to that, because you're right, there are a lot of guys when you look at like Valanciunas Vucevic, that's who I couldn't think of.
Yeah.
Greg Monroe, who has been in and out of trade talks, Jahlil Okafor. I honestly think Kanter is better than all those guys.
Monroe's a better defensive player than Kanter.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's certainly better than Okafor. And, you know, I agree with you. He's better than Vucevic, too.
Yeah. So, and plus he's 24 years old and still, you know, if teams do value that, I think he still has some room to develop. So, because after all, he's going to be shooting three-pointers next season. But, yeah, I mean, looking around, I mean, teams I've looked at, I mentioned Greg Monroe. He can be a free agent this summer. Maybe Milwaukee would be interested in Kanter as a Greg Monroe replacement. Charlotte is a team that could use some offense off the bench. Kanter could fit in there. So, I mean, if you could identify like three or four teams and just kind of let Sam try to drive up the market, try to leverage that a little bit, maybe some type of a good return could come from that.
Yeah, I wonder, what is Charlotte's cap situation again? Find this up right
now. Charlotte, I want to say...
Charlotte's got 102. Is it 102 for next year? Guaranteed, according to Basketball Insiders. Charlotte's got 102 guaranteed.
And so, of course, you know, you start thinking about three or four team trades that move money around. I think there's some possibilities out there. I can understand why, you know, some of those guys I mentioned are difficult to deal. I just think Enes Kanter is probably the best of that crop. But
yeah,
it's just one man's thoughts.
I think that's fair. He also makes a lot more money than him, though. He makes more money than Vucevic, and he makes about the same as Greg Monroe. He might actually make a little bit more than Greg Monroe, right?
I think he makes more.
Yeah, and he makes a ton more than Okafor still on a rookie deal. So that makes it tough, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's that. Yeah, we've also discussed the possibility of Kyle Singler and his, you know, his contract. So he's got 3 years left on his deal, but the last year is non-guaranteed. So he's only owed a little under $10 million on his deal. The Thunder could release him, stretch that out over 7 years, and reduce that down to about $1.4 million over 7 years.
Yep.
Which, you know, dead money on your cap is not a great thing, but I think something like that you could work around. That could get you a little bit of breathing room.
Yeah, I mean, it's 1% of the cap. It could be worth it.
The alternative is if you can find a team willing to take him, but the Thunder would have to give up something of value to get another team to absorb that. And I just don't know. I mean, the Thunder they're not in a position to deal a first round pick, and I wouldn't advocate doing that just to get Kyle Singler off the books. So, you know, maybe something like that. And then, you know, Huesis's deal, if they think he's part of the organization, if they still have a plan for him going forward, then he's on a great deal for that to happen. But, you know, if they're ready to cut bait, I think that's a deal that they could easily move on, you know, and let someone else absorb and, again, get some breathing room there.
Right. I mean, the thing is, though, like with Custis specifically and with Jeremy Grant and, like, you know, these guys on small deals, Samaje Christen, whose deal is not guaranteed for $1.3 million, it's not like you're just going to release these guys and then go through next year with 13 guys on your roster. Like, right. Realistically, you are replacing these guys. So if you decide to waive Samaje Christen's $1.3 million for next year, which is all non-guaranteed and wouldn't cost you a dime, you're still bringing in somebody for the minimum to replace him. So you're not saving. And if you bring in a veteran, you're actually losing money. So you're really not conceivably saving that much money. Now, if you just don't think Samaje Christen's good and you want him off the team, that's a different conversation. Then you're doing it for basketball reasons. But it doesn't make that much sense to get rid of, you know, Custis on a rookie contract, or Grant on a rookie contract, or Christen on a rookie contract. Like, it doesn't make basketball sense. Or I should say, it doesn't make financial sense, I mean, to just get rid of those guys if you're just going to replace them with minimum deals anyway.
Right.
I mean, that's unless you have, you know, a guy. If you're doing it for basketball reasons, that's totally different. It's a totally different thing, obviously. If you have a guy in mind and you think this guy's better, we're going to improve our team. Then of course, you do that. But all things being equal, I don't think you just kind of get rid of one of those guys without a plan. Now, Christen, I think, is a guy. I don't think his contract for next year guarantees until late anyway. So I think you've got yourself some time to make up that decision anyway. But the other guys, it just makes more sense for me to hold on. Now, they have a conversation they have to have about Houston's fourth-year option for 2018, too, but that doesn't affect them in the upcoming season.
Yeah. Yeah, like I say, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if he is part of the summer league team this summer, which I assume he would be. Again, I think, like, a lot of fans are just kind of wondering, like, is he in your plans or not? And you know, if he is, then perhaps he alleviates some of these, these items on the punch list we're talking about that they need to address this summer. Maybe he could help out with that. But yeah, you know, maybe you could string together, you know, moving Cantor in some complicated transaction that actually brings back a lower salaried backup point guard from somewhere. Like, I'll throw out Matthew Dellavedova. Just as a name, Corey Joseph, other guys I've been looking at this morning, and I'm spitballing here, not trying to piece together a logical trade. But maybe you could do something like that fills another area of need. And then they have some guys that could kind of fill Cantor's role. I mean, they've got a bunch of big men. They change the way they play a little bit, and, you know, they could work around that. You bring up Dakari Johnson, and he's a spot backup center throughout the season on a minimum salary deal. I think there's some things they can do there to bring back the core of the team, address some other areas of need, and still kind of push forward.
So according to Eric Pincus of Basketball Insiders, who is very, very good at his job, Christian's salary for 2017-18 guarantees on July 7th. So they can operate for the entire moratorium and then, you know, and then figure out what they want to do, you know, six days into free agency, they can figure out what they want to do with that. So that gives them, you know, a reasonable amount of time into the free agency period to make a decision on that salary without any sort of financial penalty. So that's a team-friendly date for them. I mean, it could be later than that, but that's certainly team-friendly. It's not like, you know, a lot of contracts you'll see, they guarantee on June 30th. Mm-hmm. So you have to make your decision before free agency. You don't know for sure what's going to happen, what you're going to do. You can at least, you know, you're a week into free agency, then you can see what deals are signed. You can see what you're trying to do. And if you need to shave off some money and, you know, or maybe you weren't able to get a backup point guard or whatever it is, then you can decide what you want to do with Christen.
Yeah. And too, I mean, he could be a third stringer. You know, they could keep him around to fill that third string spot.
Well,
that was the goal.
That was the goal. The goal was not him to be the backup. The goal was Cameron Payne to be the backup.
Yep.
Things changed.
A lot of things changed.
The goal was for Norris Cole to be the backup. Things changed. You know?
Yep.
That was not the goal. Anything else you got? Anything else you think is important to discuss for the listeners to know on this topic?
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of throwing some things out, and I always add the disclaimer that if I've thought of it, then the front office is probably a couple of steps ahead of me. You know, they've already got some 5-team monster trade laid out that's going to, you know, drastically reshape some areas of concern. You know, it's probably not something as simple as I'm able to conjure up, but I mean, these are some of the scenarios that I've been kicking around.
All right, 5-team monster trade coming. You heard it first from John Hamm.
That's right. That's right. Look for it.
What do you got? What do you got to plug? What's the deal with the NBA Insider Show? What's the deal with your stuff with the franchise now that the season's over? What do you got?
Yeah, you know, right now I seem to be podcasting more than anything else. Obviously, I'm doing this today. Later tonight, I'm doing a podcast with the Thunderheads, which is another local podcast. I'm scheduled to join Eric Horn and Brett Dawson on Thunder Buddies later this week because off-season stuff is kind of my wheelhouse. So I am sketching up sort of a little Q&A for Daily Thunder that hopefully will go up sometime this week. And, you know, just kind of playing around in those margins a little bit.
Great. And you can remember I'm on now Tuesdays and Thursdays, so I'm going to be off tomorrow and back on Thursday. Thursday, I'm just going to be doing a season evaluation thing. Every Thursday, I'm going to be doing evaluations. So this Thursday, I'm going to be going through the wings, and then it's the same thing that I'm doing for my, you know, write-ups for the player evaluations. This Thursday, I'm going through the wings, and then the next week, I'm going to be going through the bigs, and the next Thursday, I'm going to be going through the guards. But you can head on to iTunes. You can subscribe to Locked On Thunder there. If you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com or find me on Twitter @FredKatz, FREDKATZ. John, you're John M. Hamm.
That's right.
There we go. It would be bad if I didn't know your handle at this point.
Not that anyone else that I work with has trouble with my Twitter handle. Looking at you, Jerry.
Yeah, it's all Jerry's. We can't make jokes about not having Jerry on anymore.
Because, yeah, you relented.
I know. I let him on. I can't believe I did it. I let him on and they did house chores the whole time.
Yeah. Yep. And now he wonders, why do they wait so long?
Yeah, well, why? Wonders why don't you have me on, Fred? Well, you're literally doing house chores while you're on. You're like doing the dishes and walking outside, and I can hear the crickets outside in the middle of the podcast. I can hear you clanking dishes.
But yeah. Yeah. Running the garbage disposal, running the vacuum. I know.
Yep. Yep. Well, anyway, you can log on to normantranscript.com. See all your Thunder stuff there, and you can see all my Thunder coverage. It's on normantranscript.com at my blog, Thunder Road. And like I said, player evaluations. Monday was Andre Robertson. Tuesday is Doug McDermott. The rest of the week is the rest of the wings. Kind of wedged. Is it cool? So I had to go 5-5-5. I kind of wedged Jeremy Grant into wing week. You think that's cool?
Oh, considering I think what they had in mind for him when they acquired him. Okay, that's fine. I think where he's going to wind up, not so much, but
sure. I mean, I will write that, but just in terms of 5-5-5, I can't make. Yeah. I didn't decide that the work week was 5 days. If the work week varied between 6 and 4 days, I would be able to do it. Unfortunately, Monday through Friday, I had to do 5, so I threw Jeremy Grant as a wing. I apologize. I believe he's a 4 moving forward, and I've said on this podcast before that I think that he is going to play more 5 than 3 come the end of his career. So I believe that he is a big, but he kind of acts like a wing, you know?
Yeah, so he kind of does.
He does play the 3, so he's part of wing week. That is going to do it for today. Off for a couple days, back on Thursday now. Until then, Locked On Thunder is locking up.
The high five. Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate, and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High fashion, Old Navy.
Valid 10-2 to 10-10. Select styles only.